You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome into a Friday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on our favorite new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil. We're opening up the mailbag today. We've got questions about DeMarcus Cousins, what the Heat can learn from the Clippers, and if they'll trade up in this June's draft. But let's start with this question from Kyle. Kyle writes in, if the Miami Heat were one of the houses from Game of Thrones, which house would they be and why? David, this is the question we've been wanting. This is a great mailbag question. It's timely. Yeah,
this kind of feels like a late July, early August question. You know what I'm saying? Like right after free agency's over and the draft and summer league's done and you're not quite sure what to do with yourself. But yes, this is timely. Season 8, the final season just started. So we appreciate
it. Did you have a strong opinion on episode 1?
I thought it was solid. I mean, maybe not my favorite episode, but I think it's important to kind of lay the groundwork for the rest of the story. Even though it's a short season, you kind of still need to figure it out. Are people upset about it somehow?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of people are just like, oh, they phoned it in. You know, they just like, they were clearing their throat in the first episode. It was really boring. That was so lousy. I'm like, I kind of liked it. I thought we had a lot of things.
No spoilers.
No spoiler. I don't want to spoil it. I'm sure everybody's listening like, why not? Because I already watched it. But, yeah, I just thought they got things done and accomplished that they needed to get things done and accomplished early in the season.
Yes.
In order to move on with the rest of everything that needs to happen. It's the last season. We've got to start moving around here. And I thought they did that. Like, nobody blew up or died. Like, that's not a spoiler. I'm sorry. But, like, you know. Yeah. I don't know what else people expect.
I think everybody expects a huge battle every time. One that costs millions of dollars in CGI with dragons and, you know, and ice walkers and everything else. I mean, just so many different elements there. And, you know.
That's apparently coming episode 3. Yes. That's the longest episode of the season. I'm very excited for it.
I am too. Apparently, isn't that the same weekend where Avengers comes out too? So, I mean, there's a lot going on.
Oh, is it? I didn't even line that up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean. And, of course, the playoffs are going on. Basically, it's weekend no sleep for Dave.
So to go back to this question here, if the Heat were one of the houses from Game of Thrones, phenomenal question, Kyle, just round of applause, which house would it be?
So yeah, much like Harry Potter, you know, these houses all have distinct areas, geographical areas they represent. They have personality types, they have traits and habits, whether you know they've been detailed in the books or in the TV show. And so we came up with a couple different options there. And when I looked at what option I thought they were, what house I thought they were best embodied by, it was House Stark. Starks of Winterfell. You know, the dire wolf on the crest there, kind of a mythical
Looks
creature.
A little bit like Pat Riley.
Maybe a mythical creature. You know, the dire wolf represents culture. He cultured to an extent there. Yep. And, you know, they're cold. They're of the north.
Insulated.
They're insulated. They love the fact that they're different than everybody else, that they know what it takes to put up with the cold winters. It's like, you know, as much as the heat likes to be forged in you through the culture, you know, the fires of culture, I think it's the cold also that kind of sharpens them a little bit, makes them who they are. They're mistrusting of outsiders. They kind of keep to themselves. But at the same time, they kind of take pride in a sense of loyalty. In a sense of resiliency, being able to stand up for each other and do the quote unquote right thing, even if it winds up costing, you know, Ned Stark his head. Sorry, had to throw that one in there. That's season 1. If you haven't seen it by now, you're not gonna ever see it.
Sorry. Yeah.
So either way, the point is, I think there's a lot there that kind of mirrors what Miami Heat culture kind of sees themselves as. So.
Was Dwayne Wade leaving for Chicago in 2016 the equivalent of Jon Snow getting named King of the North, leaving, and then bending the knee to Danny?
Wow.
Is that
now you're getting a little too recent there. So I'm not sure if that's quite spoilery, but yeah.
It was last season, people.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago at this point.
That's such a, like, if you haven't watched it, then you have no idea what I just said. So I don't, like, that won't, you won't, that's not spoiling anything. You're just confused at this point. You've already turned the episode
off. Is Dwayne Wade going, no, I don't, yeah, that's a pretty good comparison there. It does feel like a somewhat of a betrayal.
Right, yeah. It's like, we trusted you. The key was under the mat for you, and you left.
But he came back, though.
He did. Came back.
So we're optimistic that John will somehow be able to repair any kind of hurt feelings. Looking at you, Sansa. Right. You know, that's can I address this? I've seen this on Twitter. A lot of people, quote unquote, standing for Sansa. Like, to me,
big fan of Sansa.
You are
big fan of Sansa. My God,
this might be my retirement putt. I cannot believe I'm hearing this from you, Sansa. Like, seriously, like, she's a spoiled, obnoxious brat. Has always been. And if not for incredible tragedy at being married to two sociopaths, incredible physical violence is the only reason why she's had any kind of awareness of her circumstances. But even to this day, I think she's still haughty. I think she's still full of herself. I think she has no kind of concern or care for anybody else around her. And I think
she's a little, and she's narrow. She lacks perspective.
Oh, big time. I mean,
I agree 100% all the points you're making.
And somehow you still like this person? Like, she sounds like enough. Yes. If you were describing this person without the benefit of the show, and you're saying,
I would never want to hang out with her. I don't, like, so I'm not saying, like,
how do you like somebody you don't want to hang out with?
I mean,
like,
I do sort of want to hang out with her, but.
Okay, so who do you want to hang out with?
In spite of all the reasons you just said.
Who do you want to hang out
with? Who would I want to hang out with of all the Game of Thrones characters?
I know.
The Onion Knight, for sure.
Ooh!
Or Tyrion.
Tyrion! Yeah, come on. You're going to a brothel on a
But I'm just saying, I like Sansa's storyline.
Okay.
I think it's a good storyline.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting, but...
And so I am a fan of hers.
I don't think she's changed much from the brat that was in season 1. Like, I saw a compilation video of all of her biting comebacks, and it's like, okay. So she's a little sarcastic, and despite whatever intelligence has led to that sarcastic wit... She still has no idea of what anything is going around her or who she should have proper allegiance to. To me, like, give me the dour, dull, prodding loyalty of a Ned Stark and a Jon Snow any day. I don't know.
Ned was one of the worst characters on the show.
Not for me.
But you're talking to somebody whose favorite character is Ramsay Bolton.
So. Oh, my God. Whoa. That says a lot more about
One of the
about
best
you.
Villains in TV history. Way better villain than Joffrey. Not even close.
No. You see, Joffrey was easier to hate. Ramsay was just like... I don't even know if sociopath will describe it properly. Like,
you were impressed by his creativity.
That is one way of putting it. Yeah, I'm a little concerned now. This is my retirement pod for multiple reasons. Thanks, Wes.
I had the Heat as House Greyjoy.
Okay.
Their slogan is "What is dead may never die." I'm still not completely sure what that means, but it sounds like something like Pat Riley would say in his end of season press conference and all the reporters.
Yeah, it's like filled with depth that doesn't actually make any sense. It's like, wow, yeah, it sounds cool. I'm ready to run through a wall for it, but what does it even mean?
Right. It's like, why did you paint that on the ceiling? Like, why is that there? They've got the Iron Fleet. You made the comparison before we started recording. That's Mickey Arison's Carnival Cruise Line. It's just this Iron Fleet. They're surrounded by water. You know, they're on an island. So
that's Game Bay.
Whatever. Yeah, that's kind of where. And they seem old school. They just like they have their ways of doing stuff. Yeah. They're really not going to change it, even though it seems like from outsiders to be ridiculous. Like, to be king, you just, like, kill each other on the beach, and that sort of... And then you just, like... And then you get drowned, and then
That's
now
like
you,
Pat
like,
Riley
roll,
dunking
whatever.
His head in the ice bucket all those years ago.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So, So I've got House Greyjoy. They just seem like good matches.
Yeah, a lot of, not necessarily incestuous relationships, but at the same time, kind of like, you know, it stays all in the family there.
Right. You're a player. You become an executive. You stay in-house.
Yeah. I wonder who's going to be the Uncle Greyjoy... Who's come up recently? Who's going to come back to kind of like take over the franchise and run it? Is it Shane Battier? No.
Mm.
I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of comparisons. I like the Winterfell, you know, the Starks of Winterfell 1. Winter is coming. That's kind of like saying culture is coming all the time. But at the same time, the idea of the isolationists there on the Iron Island, you know, that's a very interesting one. And I kind of like that one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I like both of them. Yeah, I like both of them. The key thread between both, they have their own way of doing things. They're somewhat isolated. And that's really what the Heat are. That's kind of their brand. DeMarcus Cousins, our next question is about him. He would be an amazing Game of Thrones character. Like, just put DeMarcus Cousins as is. Warriors jersey, whatever. Just put him in the episode. Like, have him just, like, walk around with the Hound for, like, all of season
You
3.
remember
I'm
that
good.
Game of Zones episode with him?
Yes.
Yes.
He's a good
He
character.
was.
Very good character. The new Game of Zones is good. I like the Jimmy Butler.
I've not
thing.
Seen
that was
it yet.
Good,
I've not seen it yet.
Oh, it's very good. It's very graphic. All right. Speaking of DeMarcus Cousins, let's get to that question, but let's take a quick break first. Recyclops writes in. Recyclops wished me a happy birthday on Twitter. It was very nice.
Oh, you just now you just want everybody to wish you a happy birthday.
Yeah, it's too late for those people. Can the Heat learn anything about rebuilding from teams like Brooklyn or the Clippers? Brooklyn hasn't had a pick in an eternity, and the Clippers almost seamlessly went from the CP3 Blake DJ era to this new era. David, what do you think? Because both Brooklyn and the Clippers are having moderate success right now in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously the Clippers one was a little bit more of a quicker turnaround there. You know, they traded away to Blake last year. They traded away Chris Paul before the start of last season.
Mm-hmm.
DeAndre was on that roster for all of last year, and they only traded. He signed as a free agent with Dallas this past season.
Yeah,
so.
But then they got like Tobias Harris in that Blake deal, and then flipped him for more assets. They did a great job. I think the difference between what the Clippers were at and where the Heat were at, is that they had a bunch of superstars who were ultimately assets. And look, the thing is, Blake Griffin was considered untradeable because of his contract when he signed that extension. He was tradable. You got Tobias Harris, and then you flipped Tobias Harris for more assets. So that was a great move by them. They didn't get a whole lot out of CP3 on paper, but then you look at what they got, and it turned into Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell being their two best players this season, basically, right? And anchoring that bench unit. So it's just, at the end of the day, they had these guys that they could trade. I don't know that the Heat can necessarily repeat what the Clippers have done because they just don't have that Blake Griffin, Chris Paul level player to move.
It would be, the first step would be to acquire said player, assuming they're still on a big contract, and then to flip them eventually down the road. And that just doesn't seem to fit either Miami's timeline or their way of doing things. Like the option would have been to say, had Chris Bosh stayed healthy, then maybe you could have traded him a couple of years ago in exchange for something else. You kind of jumpstart the process there. And, you know, the thing is they also assembled a good team. Like, they assembled a competent group that fit together. Like, you have your high energy big and Harrell, and you have your off the bench scorer in Williams, et cetera. You've got your defensive wings. You've got your bigs. You've got a nice collection of ball handlers there. I mean, they have good, solid players there, and they just seem to fit well. And I think you can't underestimate how much the chemistry has become a byproduct of being discounted. Like, nobody believed that this team was going to be able to do anything in the wake of trading away Blake Griffin. And they kind of said, oh, really? Well, we're kind of turning around. You've been around that team. You've talked to a number of their players. You wrote a great piece earlier this year about how they kind of took that personally, I think.
And look, this sounds sort of like a talking point for, you know, SportsCenter or whatever, but they really are egoless. And I can't stress that enough. And everyone wants to say the Heat are egoless, but that was not the case this season. I mean, you've got egos in that locker room. It's not a bad or a good. It's just it is what it is. And you've got a guy like Whiteside and Goran Dragic and Deion Waiters who are used to playing a certain role, and they take this backup role because guys like Justice wants to be the face of the franchise. Josh Richardson wants to try to prove that he could be a lead scorer. Bam Adebayo wants to get on the court. Like, you've got these guys. And with the Clippers, you just didn't really have that. And look, I think a lot of that could be just because this is the first year of this team. And then if you keep this team together, which we don't think they will, we think they're going to add to it over the summer. But
things will get worse.
If you were to return this team for second year, I don't think that repeats itself. It's just you kind of catch lightning in a ball. It's not to take credit away from them, but it's true. And so I think that's part of it. And the other thing that the Clippers have, they're both similar. The Heat and the Clippers are similar. They have a lot of depth, no true superstar, blah, blah, blah. But Danilo Gallinari played at almost an all-NBA level this year. Lou Williams put up 20-plus points per game. The Heat didn't have a 20-point score. Montrezl Harrell was better than any center the Heat had on the roster. And that's, you know, that's just true. He was really, really good this year. Bam Adebayo and Whiteside were also good, just not as good as Montrez. And so I think that was a really big part of it. They just, there is a lot of depth there, but they just, they also have a couple of higher level players, and as much turnover as they had, they didn't have a whole lot of injuries. You know, the Heat had a bunch of injuries, so I think that was part of it. But learning from them, what can you do? Well, you just got to make sure that maybe you can move. Like, if you're trying to recreate what the Clippers did, you don't have Blake Griffin or Chris Paul to move, but maybe you can move a piece here and there and land, you know, a distressed asset like a Danilo Gallinari and just hope he gets healthy for a season like Danilo did. Maybe you can move that for a distressed asset like Lou Williams, right, and get a little bit more out of him. And the Heat have done a really good job in the past of getting the most out of, you know, out-of-the-league players and making them C-level to B-minus level players. Well, if you can get, like, a C-minus player, you can turn that into a B or B-plus type player like the Clippers did. And so I think that would be the move. Can you bunch a couple of these guys up, a Whiteside or a James Johnson or whatever this is, and move a couple of these pieces around and go get one of those or two of those guys, and all of a sudden that creates a higher ceiling for the team? That would, to me, be the move. Now, as far as Brooklyn goes, they also had an asset that the Heat didn't have, right? The Clippers had superstars to move. Brooklyn, as many, like, they didn't have picks. They seemed like the worst situation in the league. They had a lot of cap space, and they were able to create assets out of that cap space. That's another asset that the Heat don't have.
Yeah. You know, I've long been a fan of Sean Marks after hearing his initial interview. Like, this was years ago, and I remember going on a podcast with you and talking about it. Like I was a believer and what he was going to be able to do, and I'm glad to see that it's paid off for him, because he had a clear vision, which is, to be honest with you, something I'm not sure that this Heat franchise has. So they went in there with former team president Billy King and you know, ownership, et cetera, and not a coaching staff that was going to be in place there. It was, well, what's his name, Jason Kidd. You know, they were in a bad place, in a really bad place. They were at rock bottom, I think, for the most part. And they kind of had to jumpstart everything. So one of the things that they were different in that Miami is they had patience, they had time, they had cap space, they had low expectations. And so all those things don't exist in Miami. In fact, you would say, you can probably argue that they have the exact opposite of those. You know, Miami has a definitive timeline where they want to win today as much as possible, even when that's not realistic. They're not willing to sacrifice their immediate chance at winning for the potential of winning down the line. And I think there's a high expectation among the ownership, the front office, and the fan base. As we've seen, they want a contender soon rather than later. So I don't know that it's realistic for this team to say, let's just trade everything and see if maybe we get lucky in 4 years. Look, I mean, I don't think anybody saw, okay, maybe you can say in hindsight that you saw this, but I don't think a lot of people looked at D'Angelo Russell and what happened with his tenure in Los Angeles and said this guy was going to be an electric all-star.
Yeah, no, I would agree 100% with that. And everybody that knocks the Lakers for that, nobody had a real big problem with it at the time, because when they moved him, the idea was to elevate Lonzo Ball, and everybody was sort of on board with that, because everybody loved Lonzo Ball coming out of UCLA. But that was the sort of move, right? Like, when they traded for D'Angelo Russell, they did so by absorbing, $18 million a year of Timofey Mozgov? Mm-hmm. Like, the Lakers had to get off that deal because they knew they wanted to chase LeBron, so they had to attach an asset to that. The Heat almost seemed to be more on the Lakers' side than the Brooklyn side. Like, if they wanted to get off of one of these bad contracts, they'd almost have to attach a Justice or a Josh or a Bam to that contract. And they obviously don't want to do that, and I would highly advise against it. But if you're the Heat, I guess what you learn from that is, all right, nobody was really a big fan of D'Angelo Russell. He had the whole cell phone thing with Nick Young. It was a whole deal. Can you find a distressed asset, very similar to what the Clippers did, can you find a distressed asset, buy low, and hope that it pans out? And I think that's sort of the idea if you're the Heat. Now, you can't necessarily go about it in the same way that the Clippers and the Nets did, but there's ways to go about it. And I think one of the things they could do is stop valuing your own guys so much. And when I say that is, don't just value the fact that you have them in the locker room, right? Because this team isn't as good as they need to be. So be willing to trade Whiteside despite his ceiling. Be willing to trade Goran Dragic despite his leadership in that locker room. Like, you've got to be willing to move these guys, even if it means today on paper you take back a little bit less, but maybe that player pans out in the future. If you trade Dragic and you're able to get, say, I don't know, Dante Exum. Let's just throw that name out there. Not that I would necessarily do that, but what if Exum, who is a former top 6-7 pick in the draft, and it hasn't worked out in Utah, but what if it works out in Miami? Like, that's the sort of thing. It was similar to, like, Paul George for Oladipo. Oladipo, distressed asset, bad contract, blah, blah, blah. He's a superstar now. Like, you just have to make a lot of those bets and just hope one of them pans out. And I think if you're the Heat, that's what you got to do. So if you have to trade Dragic, Whiteside, whoever, and today it looks like you get back a little bit less, but maybe there's a chance there where that actually pans out and you come out the winner of that trade.
I think you'd probably need, like, a whole culture reset, to be honest with you. Like, you'd have to... It would have to restart. Like, you'd have to move Eric Spoelstra. You'd have to fire him, or you'd have to quit and take a position.
I'm not saying you rebuild the thing. I'm just saying, like, if it's clear that these guys are not going to be part of the future, you know? Yeah. Like, I'm not, like, and just rebuild around those guys. Like, the white. And look, this is not, and you're right. Like, they don't really have this 2-3 year kind of idea, but if you can win like the Clippers in Brooklyn have done this year while still putting the, like, setting the chess pieces in the right places.
I think that's the key step is we're not at where LA was or where Brooklyn was when they started these rebuilding processes. Again, I don't even think the Clippers is a rebuilding process because they had to move their superstars, but again, they were superstars. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're even further behind those two teams. So, in the sense that we don't have either cap space and we don't have the superstars to trade and kind of jumpstart the process.
Or draft picks to move. Like, the Heat need to, they have to spend this summer finding whatever it is that their angle is, right? Go find, if your angle is going to be cap space, go clear cap space. If your angle is going to be, we've got a bunch of second round picks, trade Whiteside and Dragic and all these guys for a bunch of second round picks. Like, just figure out what your angle is going to be, double down on it, and go forward with that plan. Because I think, and like I said, maybe you go get a distressed asset here and there. That player pops for you, and you kind of get lucky the way the Clippers did, or you're able to take advantage of a weak conference the way Brooklyn did, and all of a sudden, you know, you're a playoff team, and you got a little bit more feel good, and that's kind of this other thing that the Clippers and Brooklyn have. People feel good about those organizations right now, and that's going to help them this summer. The Heat got to get back into that place.
That's not going
to
last.
Which is, that's what they've always wanted to do. They've always wanted to be a playoff team, and they believe in that.
That's not going to last in Brooklyn, to be honest with you.
We'll see. Remember to get this show every day by subscribing to Locked On Heat on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Heat. Kevin writes in, should the Heat sign DeMarcus Cousins and move Hassan? Bam and Boogie could be a dynamic offensive front court. David, what do you think?
That's a big risk. This is the kind of distress, quote unquote, asset that you were talking about. Like, I think DeMarcus's free agency is going to be one of the more interesting and strange questions, because this is the second year in a row now where he's had a major injury. And while the quad tear that is likely to keep him out of the playoffs for the rest of the year isn't as significant as an Achilles, particularly for a big man, it's still a bad one. And now you're starting to see questions about durability and things of this sort. You know, you have to take a chance there. So I don't know, as far as Hassan, you're not moving Hassan for Boogie. Like they're
right,
not
you're not doing a straight up trade. I think what Kevin means is, like, you sign DeMarcus Cousins, and then in a separate trade, you move Hassan Whiteside, just because that would be too many centers.
Yeah, and if that's the case, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, when we discussed Kelly Olynyk and his exit interview, one of the things that we said was, you know, you can't have him be your backup. And then, you know, or be your starting power forward when you have Hassan on the roster. And I think with Boogie there, I imagine that he would probably be your starter. But that's okay, because I think that's a better fit alongside Bam there. I think his versatility is still something that you can count on. He's a great passer. You know, he's not a great defender by any court, you know, stretch of the imagination there, but he's a great scorer. Obviously, he stretches the floor. So I think he's a little bit more duplicative of, like, Olynyk's skill set. So I think it fits better. Like, again, if you want a vision for this team, have a vision and implement and have the personnel to do it. You can't have versatile bigs like Olynyk and Adebayo, and then have a throwback center like Whiteside on there, because then it's, you don't know what style of play this team is best suited for. And so you have these two contrasting levels of play, styles of play, and you're not really sure what version of this team is the most effective one. And then you're trying to kind of fit all these pieces badly. When you look at Cousins, he's more along the lines of the kind of player that you want in Miami, as far as not necessarily a faster tempo, but he can space the floor. He's a great passer as a big man. There's a lot that he can do there. If he has to put his back to the basket, he can score that way too. So I personally, I prefer that move. I prefer having DeMarcus over Hassan Whiteside on this roster.
Yeah, I'm going to just say no to the whole idea. I like DeMarcus Cousins. I really do. But for where the Heat are, look, he's coming off this torn quad thing. It's going to take him a long time to rehab that. This is a team that is just, this Heat team is just, every year, they are just dealing with injuries before the season even starts. And at some point, you got to stop recruiting that problem. And I think the Heat need to try to move away from that as much as they can. You've got DeMarcus Cousins there. He's probably not going to be good to start next season. He wasn't even in the best shape when he was playing, coming off of that Achilles tear, right? And so he needs like a long time to get back into shape here. And the Heat don't really have that time. Right. I see DeMarcus Cousins more as going to a team that's probably a playoff contender that would say, like, almost like the Warriors, but where you're saying, all right, like, you could kind of spend the year getting you right, and then in the playoffs just sort of use you.
Portland
would be great, yeah. And you're almost using Boogie as insurance as opposed to, like, the answer. And I think this idea here is that DeMarcus Cousins would almost be the answer, and I don't see it. I'd rather move Hassan Whiteside and not bring back DeMarcus Cousins. I would rather just move Hassan Whiteside, elevate Kelly Olynyk to backup center behind Bam Adebayo, call it a day at the five spot, and then fix the rest of this roster. I also don't want DeMarcus Cousins there sort of looking over Bam's shoulder. I think it's time to lean all the way into the Bam Adebayo era. I'd rather have that. I hope DeMarcus Cousins finds a good situation. I don't think it's a good situation for either team, for either side of this, for DeMarcus or the Heat.
That's fair. There'll be expectations on him, and he may not live up to those in Miami. So,
the real Rick Scott writes in, and we don't think this is the real Rick Scott. I would guess that it's not.
And I hope it's not.
Yeah, if it is, then we're not going to. I know much of the talk with our pick is probably geared towards trading it for a player, but is there a chance that we trade up in the draft if a Donovan Mitchell type is there? Not sure how they do it. Just curious if you think they would ever consider it. This is a really good question, because the Heat have the 13th slot in the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
If we assume they remain at 13, which the odds say they will, but you never know. There's a 5% chance they end up in the top four. Cross your fingers. I don't know that it would be worth moving up. I would say, look, I'm never going to say there's no chance, and there's always a guy who slips and ends up, you know, outperforming his draft selection, but there's kind of two or three guys people really love in this draft,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to take a lot to trade up into that, and only because of that reason. This is not necessarily a deep draft, and just because it would cost so much to trade up into a place where it's almost worth trading up, I would say no.
Yeah, I think it's the depth of the draft that you have to look at as far as why you would make a move like this. If there was a player, I think in Mitchell's draft, I mean, he was taken late. I mean,
great draft.
Giannunoby, Jared Allen was taken late. I mean, there was somebody, even Adebayo, et cetera. Yeah, the same season, right? I'm sorry. What am I thinking? Yeah, so, I mean, there was a lot of great players, especially in the later part of that first round there. So I don't think a lot of people see that being the case for this draft, and so
yeah, that's not like hindsight. Everybody knew that was a really loaded deep draft. People loved the top 20 of that draft. Like John Collins was taken at 19. Like people loved.
Yeah, we thought the Donovan Mitchell was a top 10 guy, and then he slipped at 13. I mean, that was
You and I were getting Donovan Mitchell, and then he went at 13.
I thought it was
that was a disappointing day. I drank a lot of bourbon that night. I would say the one guy that kind of makes me think the Heat might make a move. Well, there's two guys, really. DeAndre Hunter out of Virginia, who could slide out of the top five because he just doesn't have this like high-level athleticism stuff that people typically draft. So if he falls to 6, 7, 8, maybe you move up. Maybe Washington, Memphis, New Orleans, one of these teams around there. you know, maybe Minnesota, who might not want to add another young player, prefer to get something to trade down and get like a veteran piece of some kind from the Heat. I could see something like that.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Coby White out of North Carolina. I just think his skill set fits so many things that the Heat need. I could see them maybe trading up for him. And then there's Sekou Doumbouya, who we've been talking about for a couple of months now. He's rising up draft boards, too, lately. So it depends on what kind of intel the Heat get, but maybe they move up for a guy like that. The youngest player who's going to get selected in the lottery, ostensibly, and really high upside. So maybe the Heat want to swing for the fences with a guy like that. So I'm not going to say – the reason I'm a little hesitant is I just don't know what you trade. They don't have future picks that they should be moving. They don't have any second-round picks. Those second-round picks don't really get you high up in the draft anyway. It usually takes, like we saw with the Hawks and the Mavericks this last draft, it takes a future first-rounder to move up in the first round.
Yeah.
With any real significance, like Dallas did for Luka.
Right.
So if we're not talking about like 14 to 13, right? If that's the case, you just figure it out. But from like 13 to 6, 7, 8, that's a pretty big leap. You know, you're going from the end of the lottery to the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, I hate bringing up the Blazers again, but they made a leap like that for Zach Collins, and it hasn't exactly paid off for them.
And what did they trade? I can't remember what they moved for them.
Players and picks. I think it was two picks in order to move up for that first-round pick.
And the Heat already owe their 2021 pick, right? So it just it doesn't make sense for them. It just doesn't. Like, unless they think this guy, like, whoever they move up for is the next Dwayne Wade, and that's still a really big risk.
Yeah. No, I mean, they'll consider it, but, I mean... The combination of the 13th pick and Dion Waiters isn't enough to move up three slots in the draft.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you're able to do it where...
A future second?
Dragic? Like, can you move Dragic in the 13th pick to the Wizards at 6 and then take back a salary that they don't necessarily... Like, not John Wall, but like...
Yeah, no, that sounds... Yeah, Jan Mahimi and their first rounder or something like that.
Yeah, oof, like you're able to help him out with something like that. But then if you're the Heat, you're taking on it. I don't know if Mahimi's contract expires, but I think it does. But you'd almost have to take a longer term contract back, and that goes against what the Heat want to do as far as their cap space for 2020. So there's just a lot of things in the way for the Heat. And that kind of goes back to our last question about the Clippers and the Nets. The Heat just don't have a whole lot of assets. They don't really have a lot of avenues. They almost have to cross your fingers, hope this pick lands in the top five. Right?
Yeah.
Or hope that you just get the steal of the draft at 13, which they could do. Just they better be scouting really hard and doing their homework, which I'm sure they are. All right, well, that's it for the mailbag. Thanks for listening, and remember you could subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, man.